Da-da! Let there be light, and a lot of lights are here. So I'm quite sure that everybody who is here is also a light magic, or at least light fascinated. And it was a pleasure for me to read the descriptions of these two people here who are holding the next talk, because he wrote, obsessed with everything that creates light, noise, motion, and smoke. And if you are going through the camp in the night, you see it's like a big trippy surrounding where every nerd feels very likely at home. So give a warm welcome to our next two speakers, Tim Becker and Matthias Krau.
Okay. Yeah, thanks a lot for the welcome. Thanks for the introduction. I'm Tim, this is Matthias. We have to start off with a disclaimer. If you're hoping for like the exciting, blinky, colorful light sharks with freaking laser beams on their heads, this is a boring lights only talk. This is about sort of like office illumination, solid, boring lighting. And we have appropriately ugly slides. And we're going to start with sort of the way that you do things, a little bit about us. We're Press Every Key. We do embedded hardware, very eclectic projects, everything from working on with interactive artists on stage setups to working with banks with chip cards. And this year, or last year and this year, we had a lot of light projects. So light with little photo cubes to do product photography. Human-centric light setups and a DALI protocol implementation for very high like precision museum lighting that are very precise in color. And all of these sort of things about LED lighting, we learned a lot about LED lighting, and we kind of created started creating our own LED lightings, and we kind of wanted to share the things that were hard to learn and the things that are obvious to people who are in the business. And if you're interested in designing lamps and lights, this is sort of the talk for you. I don't know how much, do any of you have anything to do with lighting, like industrial desktop lighting lamps? Okay. So with most technology, there's drivers like, you know, defense industry and space. With lighting, that was more or less EU bureaucracy driving innovation in lighting in the last couple of years. Regulation 244/2009 is the thing that caused normal incandescent lights to become obsolete 5 years ago in 2012. And people really hated that because the replacement were the CFLs, which is compact fluorescent light bulbs, the stuff that you would commonly know as shitty energy saver bulbs, the stuff that like take a long time to turn on. And people are trying to, and they make shitty light, they contain mercury, and people are really just against using those. And there's still, this was from a week ago in Berlin, people are still selling like rests of normal light bulbs because people really want to have them. Or people tried to sell them as heat globes and things like that. And it took a while because CFLs suck, halogen is also going to be illegal, or won't be sold from next year on. LEDs weren't really there yet because they were expensive, and for a very long time you couldn't really produce white light with them. But they are becoming more and more viable as an alternative. There's this thing called Haight's Law, where you can see that on the one hand there's a trend of white LEDs being able to produce more lights exponentially, and at the same time, just getting cheaper and cheaper, and if you measure it as light per watts. So in 2012, normal light bulbs were outlawed, and all of a sudden, people were confronted for the first time for what it means to have really shitty lights. And that spawned a new trend in sort of the lighting industry, which is human-centric lighting. And this is really, like, if you go to light conferences or something, that's what it's all about. That's what all the big manufacturers of lamps are pushing now. And if you look at this Google Trends line, it starts basically when when incandescent lamps become obsolete. Of course, it's not a new thing, right? I mean, this efflux thing, a lot of people have that here that changes the color temperature of your light and is supposed to help your sleep cycle. That's human-centric. Obviously, light is the biggest technical intervention in the normal state of things, so it really messes with your physiognomy, whatever. But it has an effect on your sleep and light cycle. It's used as therapy for depression. It's not a new or esoteric thing that light can influence your well-being. So for the remainder of the talk, we're going to go into a little bit of LED technology, how to choose LEDs, the pros and cons of LEDs, and then go over to the sort of measures and color rendition, color temperature, things like that, explain a little bit of how to read a data sheet and what these things mean, because it's a little bit abstract. And then we'll talk a little bit about protocols, and then we'll demo our lighting solution. So we'll start off with the LEDs. These aren't typically the sort of LED that you would use in lighting. We just had it because Japanese writing is always funny. So LEDs have a number of advantages and disadvantages compared to incandescent lights. So in the main thing, they are much, much more efficient. So with the same amount of energy, you can just produce much, much more light. They don't convert nearly as much energy to heat. They do produce some heat, which is problematic on the con side because they tend to degrade themselves. If the hotter they get, the more their quality degrades. They have a much longer life than normal incandescents or even fluorescents. And that's not just in total hours of operations, but like a normal light bulb, when you turn it on and off, the cycling really physically affects it and causes it to break down. LEDs, basically, this number of cycles isn't at all problematic. But with time, they get less bright, which normal lighting tends not to have as much, and the color that they produce changes. So if you change one light bulb out of several, it will look completely different because the other ones have already degraded and they're not as bright anymore. Especially compared to the compact fluorescents, they're a lot less harmful. There's no mercury in them, there's no glass typically when they break, and they're operated at a lower voltage. But there are some new harmful possibilities there. There's something called blue light hazard, which previously was never really a thing, because normal lights, when they produce blue, will also produce a lot of ultraviolet light. The sort of damage ultraviolet light causes to your eyes is a lot more extreme than what blue light causes, but LEDs can create very pure blue light, which also causes the retina to degrade in a way. And that's something that never happened before because you could never really isolate blue light like that. They're very fickle in the production process. So if you create a dye of LEDs in the factory, depending on where they are on the dye, they'll behave differently. So even one batch of LEDs will have different colors, and you have to be very precise in picking the hardware. Cost, we said, is going down. But there's still...
Sorry to interrupt. This is not only the cost of the device itself, but usually LEDs require something around them, some controlling, some cooling, like a circuit around them, which makes them inherently more expensive than any solution that is just glowing wire.
Well, that was already current control, yeah. And I think this is your start. Anyway. Okay. Do you want to?
Yep. Who of you is into hardware? It's like doing electronics engineering, has read data sheets, stuff like that. Okay. We want to look into a data sheet of an LED. It's actually the LED that we're using. And these data sheets are amazing. Like for every electronic component, you get very, very detailed descriptions of how their characteristics are. And this is the typical thing that you have on almost every electronic device, every electronic component. The absolute maximum ratings is like there's some maximum current that you can shoot through these LEDs. If you do it continuously, more than 180 milliamps, it's gonna die at some point. There's a small pulse. You can give it something slightly more power for a short period of time. And there's a maximum power that it can handle. If you exceed one of those in the list, it's probably gonna not be in the safe area anymore. And you have operating temperature, so the maximum operating temperature, which is the surrounding temperature, is 85 degrees. That sounds like a lot, but it's actually, if the lamp is in an enclosure and there's heat around it, and like a warm environment, and you don't have possibilities to cool it, it's actually not that far. There's a storage temperature, so yep, which is slightly more. There's always a thermal resistance for power components that tells you how it behaves, like how much warmer the device will get than the environment, and you have to reduce this thermal resistance in order to get the heat out of the device, which is for this LED is not a critical issue. This is a mid-power LED. For high power LEDs, you need to do terrible things slightly bit more effort to get them into a range where they don't destroy themselves. And there's usually a range of how to solder them and what's the maximum temperature. Even these are the maximum ratings. Even with the max temperature, die temperature of 115 degrees, you're gonna degrade the LED. It's not gonna die immediately, but it's going to be worse. And these are the typical things that you see for an LED, hopefully see for an LED in a data sheet. There's something called luminous flux. We're going to see what's that in a second. You see the forward voltage, which ranges quite a lot. So you cannot control them. You can just simply take a voltage and put it into them. Like some of them will not light up at all, and some will just die because it's too much for them. So you need to take the current that was shown in the last page. There's usually a viewing angle. LEDs are typically, or they're inherently directional, which means there's a range of 120 degrees, and at the front there's the maximum light intensity going out, and at these sides, at 60 degrees left and right, there's going to be half of that intensity. And reverse current just says, this is a diode, but it's a terrible diode. Don't take it as a diode.
So for me, all of these, like luminous flux, those are all these weird, very abstract things that, like the previous slide, temperature, voltage, those are things I can relate to. But luminous flux, color rendering index, were things for me are just don't really understand. So we're going to go into some of those.
There's one more thing that is not on here, which is the color temperature. That's because it's in the title of the document. One thing to mention is. Some LEDs are there are some units of sort of brightness or light amount, and they're often confused. Let's get shortly over this. Lumens is like this is the LED and it emits light, and the total amount of light that goes out, like the sum of it, that's the luminous flux, and it's the unit is lumens. And that's, by the way, the important thing that you need to look for if you're choosing an LED. There are some LEDs that are just called super bright. It's like if you look for on eBay, like super bright LEDs means nothing. And there's candela, which is the amount of light going into a certain direction. This does not mean that has nothing to do with the amount of light. It just means that it's narrowly focused. So if you have a flashlight and focus it further, you will increase the candela, but not the lumens. So it just means it's directed, and like bad LEDs have this thing because it sounds better, but it's usually worthless. And then there's luminance, which is the amount of light that hits a certain area. And that's something you measure, like the brightness here that I'm standing on. That's about maybe 1,000 lumens, maybe 1,000 lux. And down there, there's 100 lux, something like this. But it's rather the brightness of a room or a situation and not the brightness of a light emitter.
So lux is the unit that you use to see how bright your desk, your work environment should be. Candela is to see how well your spotlight is working, and lumen is what we want for LEDs.
By the way,
for LEDs.
This is wrong. This should be lumens per square meter.
Ah, fuck, I didn't.
Yeah, doesn't matter. Okay.
Brightness.
Unfortunately, nature made it not that easy. Amount of light, and there's the perceived brightness that we judge our brightness on, and the relation is not linear. So if you have a light with, say, 10 lumens and another light with 20 lumens, you wouldn't judge this 20 lumens light to be double as bright. In fact, this is an exponential curve, and this makes it far more difficult to build dimmable LED systems, because in order to get the lower end smooth, you need a wide dynamic range. And this is just because our human perception is made for wide brightness ranges, like from the night, where there's less than 1 lux, to sunlight, where there's about 1 million lux. So we have to cope with it. So just to illustrate that, black circle, white circle, easy to understand. This should be, the thing around it should be perceived as medium gray. I don't know how it's in the presentation now. In fact, medium gray is only 18% of the light that emits from here. So you need to have a very high dimming range, which makes electronics and control more difficult. That was the first unit, brightness. Something that many people still know is color temperature. You've probably seen cold white LEDs and warm white LEDs, and this is measured in carbon. The theory behind this, there's a black body line, and this is the light that a glowing black idealized black body would emit at this temperature, which is very theoretical. It's just like, look at this line. It's like low value means warm light, and high value means cold light, which is, that's the higher temperature, and that's this is just the way the black body glows. Okay, so I take this one. Better?
Yeah.
By the way, where we're at it, this is the CIE uniform color system, and that's something we're going to see again. This is, don't take the colors seriously. Actually, what we see is just this range. That's the full spectrum we see. This shows all the colors that we that can be produced. Like at this surrounding, there are the intensest colors, like the only one wavelength of the spectrum. And like this is the mixed color, and this is like the blown line. It's like from the violet. It's just a mixture of blue and red, which is not synthesizable.
I think one of the things that for me is really confusing is the theoretical black body that already sounds kind of like science fiction. But basically, there's a concrete black body which is a normal light bulb. So these are actually the colors. If you heat metal up to these temperatures in Kelvin, that's more or less the glow that they would have.
It's not exactly that, but it's very close to this. So like the tungsten in incandescent light bulbs is 2700, like around here.
And it's a yellowish.
It's tone. Yellowish light, and that's because the tungsten inside is just that temperature.
No. Okay. And all of these units are set up around that. They're from, so the CIE thing is from 1931. And they just, a lot of this is just arbitrary things that they determined it through experimentation at that time.
One more thing about this. These are the. Does this work? Not work anywhere? Oh, okay. Like a big chart of all colors in our perception. But MacAdam showed that where our perception has various abilities to distinguish between colors. So in this, like this is like it's enlarged, but this is a range where we are in the green area, we cannot distinguish colors good. Here, the ellipses are small. We can distinguish different colors really well, and you see that the goes through an area where we're well able to distinguish between colors. So we have to be careful and we have to be very precise on that. This is not absolute. We're not good at judging difference in absolute ways, but in relative terms, like if you compare to each other,
which is problematic for the degradation and for the next. Slide basically, yep. for that they're not very LEDs aren't very precise. So if there's two that are slightly off, you notice it.
So in the data sheets of good LEDs, you will see this. This is how the manufacturer just binned, like tested each and every LED and measured each and every of those and put them into different bins so they can order just lights from this area, which are here. You cannot read it. These are the coordinates on the color system that we showed just saw. Basically, at least you get some similar colors, which is important. And you can see like all the autocodes and like there are pages and pages of
pages of different variants for those LEDs.
Yep. Okay, this was just like, and then we should say, okay, we have how bright it is, and we have the color temperature. What else should there be? In fact, it's not, unfortunately, it's not that easy. These are, because the LEDs don't emit like white light, like an even amount of lights and the frequencies, but actually they're very uneven. You can see like those are different curves for this cold LED, which has a lot of blue light in it. Basically, all the white LEDs are just blue LEDs with some phosphorus on them to convert the blue light to white light, which moves part of this energy to a longer wavelength. And depending on the chemistry of the phosphorus layer, you can achieve different color impressions. So this is the medium. This is 6,500. This is 4,000 Kelvin, and this is 2,700, which is a warm white. But if this is uneven, this can interact with how we perceive objects illuminated by the light. And this is something you might have seen if you have, a light bulb in your cellar somewhere, in your storage room. They usually have a very bad color rendition. Like, everything looks sort of weird. The colors don't look brilliant, and it's like not a nice light. And like the energy-saving lights, they also had not a very good color rendition. Typically, and that's why people didn't like the type of light. They couldn't express why, but it looked strange. Yeah, and this is an example. Like, this gets us to the CRI, the color rendering index. I don't know if this can be seen.
Yeah, this is a good display.
Okay. Look at the blue crayon. Those are two different lights with the same color rendering indexes, even, and with the same color temperature. But the results, how objects look in this, are completely different. And this is like what the CRI wants to say, even though they're equal. It doesn't mean that the lights are equal, but they're equally bad.
And CRI is one of the most voodoo and arbitrary metrics in all of this. So basically, CRI of 70 is already pretty bad. We'll get into it. 100 is perfect. That's really beautiful light. But so these are pretty bad lights, but they're bad in very different ways. This blue and this blue are just completely off, but it's the same picture.
And it's very, very random. And so how CRI is done, like how is this measured? We have a set of arbitrary chosen colors down here, and actually it's only taken the very basic version. It's just taken until this point. Those eight not really saturated colors. And the idea is like, what would happen if we illuminate this with a perfect light? And with our light, whether we want to measure, and how far are they apart? That's the basic idea of the measure. Later on, there were some colors added. Sometimes they use it, sometimes not. So it's not completely comparable. And the idea behind it, or the reason behind it, is that this thing comes out like from 100 years ago and hasn't been changed since then. This is the Munsell color system. This is like the colors are taken from them. It's just an arbitrary choice. They said, look, those are nice colors, let's use them. They don't even mean something in realistic settings.
And even the reference light, which would be perfect, it's not just arbitrary, it's also culturally insensitive because it tries to reproduce noonday light in Western Europe. So, you know, if you're from somewhere else, that's not the typical light that you might have.
Okay, what happens? Let's try. I try to explain this. This is an experiment. I don't know if it's understandable or not. This is the emission curve of the LED, the mid white LED that we've just seen. This is color spectrum from far blue to far red, and this is like the distribution of light that comes out of this source. This is a material. This is actually purple. It's called a remission line. Every color itself has also specifics on how each individual wavelength is re-emitted or absorbed, depending on the color. And there are some, like, this is like not even a sharp curve, but there's some colors with like high peaks on this, and like they take, they're different.
But the purplish color reflects a lot of the reds and purples, and it sucks up the other
sucks
side
up
of the spectrum.
In between, and the bluish, they're slightly more like it's a reddish purple. So what you do is you multiply this curve, which is the energy coming out of the light, and you multiply it with this, which gives you the amount of energy that is remains after it lit the object. And these curves down at the bottom are, well, like approximations of our perception of colors. We have three different types of color sensors in our eyes, and these approximate those, like they're the red type, the green type, and the blue type. And you, well, you multiply this with that, and then say with the red curve, which gives you, and then you look at how much you integrated, and which gives you a number, like which is the amount that how much was our red, were our red sensors triggered. You repeat that with green and blue, which gives us a color triple. Or just a triple. They're not in the CIA. They're not called red, green, blue. They're just called XYZ. And then you convert it into a point of our chart, which is the red point. Sometimes, like, you have to, well, do some color correction on that. And we know from measuring with the ideal one, like, it should be here, and which gives us a difference. And this is the amount of error. And you repeat that for all 8 test colors or 10 colors, test colors, how much depends on that. And you just do, you just average them, which is the average badness of the light. And then you say, you just assign it, like you just arbitrary scale it and subtract it from 100 because we said 100 is the best. The scale is arbitrary. It's like when they started in the 50s, 60s, they said like a fluorescent light should be around 50. And no one really cared about this. No.
But I think the thing to remember is it is arbitrary, and what you think is if 100 is perfect, it's percentages, but it has nothing to do with percentages. It's just 100 minus the average distance from what it's supposed to be to what it actually is.
That's the next slide, the summary. So it's like, yeah, we take F8, well, arbitrary chosen test colors. They're not even good. We average them. And like the color choice is arbitrary. The method, like they're taking the arithmetic median of that, is arbitrary, and the scale is also arbitrary. So it's like, yeah, it's just a number. It works quite well for most sources, but it's, for example, it's possible to build a CRI like 95 lamp that works nice for the test colors, but works terrible for all other colors. It's possible. And there are, meanwhile, there are better alternatives. I'm not going to go into details. They usually take better colors and take a bit better calculation for them or a better measuring method. So this is the worst thing. It comes from the 1950s-something. It's the worst thing that could be there, but it's usually the only value that you get. And so if you don't want to start your own spectrometric measuring, you have to live with it.
And actually, if you're not a total light nerd or a total math nerd and you want to understand how this works, basically what you need to remember is you want above 90 or good, solid LEDs.
Yeah.
Above 95 or towards 98, you probably wouldn't be able to afford them anymore.
That's excellent. 80 is the actual requirement for office illumination in Europe. And like the sodium lamps that you see on the streets, the yellowish ones, they have minus 44. That's about the worst light you can get. Okay.
Skip this.
Mm-hmm.
Skip the next one. More or less.
Yeah. Okay. We just very short. No, we skipped. Yeah. We skipped it. We wanted to think about like what is good light, and there are many, many, many different goals that we have, and we just have to pick some. We come to that back later.
What we're so now we've picked the LEDs. We're not going to go into the circuitry around actually driving the LEDs. But we basically need, from the outside, we need to connect our switch, our lighting system, our home automation system to our light bulb to be able to control it. It's just a Tower of Babel of different standards at the moment. There's lots of stuff coming around. We're going to talk about mainly the last mile, what's spoken from some sort of control unit to the light bulb. And we picked, three protocols. Two we implemented on the hardware we're going to demo, and one for some reason we put it in the introduction, so we'll just gloss over it quickly, which is Zigbee, which was always the thing, like the wireless standard for home automation, but we've kind of found that nobody really uses this, nobody really cares about it, or at least we don't, and we haven't really found a lot of people still using it, mainly because phones don't really have a Zigbee radio in it. There's still like the one thing that defines automated lighting nowadays is the Philips Hue, and that speaks Zigbee. But nobody really speaks Zigbee with it. I mean, most people will just have a bridge device that speaks Zigbee internally. And if you want to deal with those devices, it's just a REST API that you're using. So it's not really that interesting. The second protocol that we're looking at, and one that we're a little bit more in-depth and that we can create and that we can deal with, is, well, I can't really see it, DMX 512. That's traditionally used for the sort of effect lighting you see around here, for stage lighting, for discos and things like that. But it's being, now that lights are written, and office lights and home lights are becoming more than just dimmable, it's also being used for more intelligent controls and controlling color temperatures. And it's basically, it's called DMX 512 because it's basically always just one string of 513 bytes. There's one start byte, and then there are just 512 bytes that define the state of the universe. And what the universe is depends on how you set up the universe. So if you have a bunch of RGB lights, those 512 bytes, the first three might be the R, G, and B bytes for that lamp, and the next three will be the R, G, and B for that lamp. If you have a smoke machine hooked up to your DMX net, the fourth byte might then be the power of the fan for the smoke machine. It's up to the machine to decide when it's hooked up.
There's just one thing missing in this graph. Like they go continuously over the line, which is just our 45 line. Before this, in order to say this is the start of a new frame, there's a long break, like the long zero period that just basically violates the receiver, so it knows that now it's going to repeat from the beginning again, and then it goes over and over and over.
And so basically for the lamp to know which of those 512 slots it gets, you have, in Germany you say Mäuseklavier, so a mouse keyboard, you usually have dip switches on the lights, and they say, well, your slot, so-and-so. They have re-engineered a backwards compatible thing into that, which is called RDM, remote device management, which they advertise as faster than a ladder, so you don't have to climb up and change the dip switches to reconfigure the lights. You have a back channel where you can assign addresses to devices, and you can also query their status, which is nice. You can see if a light bulb is broken and things like that, and you need that for office lighting as well. The other protocol that we're dealing with, and this is one of the implementations that we did this year.
By the way, has anyone ever heard of DALI before?
Okay.
Oh,
wow,
cool.
Almost everybody. Okay, is that why you're here?
Okay.
No. It's a really, really boring protocol in comparison to this. It's a very German protocol. There's thousands of pages of ISO documentation that really define it into the smallest details. And it just basically, it's just for dimming and turning on and off lights. So there's three main sections for it. 101 system with ISO specs. If there's like a system overview spec, don't buy that.
No, it's just it's the electrical, like the voltage levels and stuff like that. It's like low level stuff
cares.
Is on there.
You can read that up on Wikipedia.
I care.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's control gear and devices. So one is the switch side and one is the light bulb side. We're concerned with the light bulb. DALI is always not 512 or 513 bytes, it's always 2 bytes, and it's extremely slow. Can we turn them? No, probably can't, right? The base command is DAPC, direct arc power control, so it's from a different time where you still had light arcs, where basically in the first byte, you would have an address for a device or a group of devices. And if the last bit of the address isn't set, then the second byte is just a dimming level from 0 to 254.
And that's the only command that has both an address and a value. Like all the others just have one of them.
Yeah. For all of the other devices, so these are starting with really basic commands. You can turn a specific device or a group of devices off. You can make it brighter. You can turn it to its maximum level, minimum level. There's lots of these weird little subtle commands. This table just goes on and on for all of the bytes, basically. There are a bunch of these sort of commands that assign the different lights to groups. You can do scenes because you only have 2 bytes and it's very slow. You try to configure the whole system ahead of time. So you would say this is a theater, and after the show, all of the lights will slowly fade up. So you want to configure that and just say, okay, go to this scene, which will be lights slowly fading up. Finally, there's a bunch of special commands. Those aren't addressed to any specific devices or groups, but they're set to the entire bus. So they're sort of broadcast commands. So all of these over 250 commands have to be implemented by any DALI device, and they're very subtle and very strange, and it's hard to understand what some of them are for. And
that's not even color, that's just brightness. 250 commands just for setting a brightness of a lamp.
And then there's a bunch of further ISO specs, which deal with either other lighting technologies that have specific requirements for them, or they deal with specific types of lamps, for example, that you want to be able to control, like the emergency exit signs. Those require a different set of commands. What we were dealing with is obviously in the bottom DT8, which is color control, so you can precisely set the color of a light. So typically it's 2 bytes, but for example, just to get a rough feeling of what DALI feels like, if we want to set a light bulb to 4,000 Kelvin, DALI doesn't work in Kelvin, it works in micro-reciprocal degrees, so it's 1 million divided by Kelvin. So we want to set it to 250. We have 16-bit resolution in the color, so we will want to set it to 00FA. That would be the bytes that we want to set it to. Because each command is only 2 bytes long, it's going to be hard to send 2 bytes because... So DALI has these things called data transfer registers. So we set the first byte into the first data transfer register and the second byte into the second data transfer register. And so these are broadcast commands and they get sent to every single light that's attached. Changing the light temperature has nothing to do with standard DALI, so we have to enable the device type 8, which has to do with color control. And just for good measure, you have to do that twice so you don't enable color control accidentally. And finally, this is the sort of standard type of command. We just put 2 stars there because then you would tell a specific device at the address to change to the color control and to change to the color temperature in its 2 registers.
And this will also set the current color space of the device to calibrate the color temperature.
We'll hurry up and we'll do, yep. So just a quick overview of DALI versus DMX. Both of them are on the board. DALI is a super old school protocol. DMX is a super old school protocol. They're very established. They've been around for a long time. They're pretty solid. DMX is fairly slow compared to like the Wi-Fi that we have here, but DALI is just incredibly slow. I mean, this is like slow in the late 80s already. DMX has it's RS-485, so you'll typically have some kind of UART on your device that can speak that. It's in a daisy chain configuration. You want it 125.
Yeah, it's like it has to be impedance controlled and terminated and stuff like that. That's because of, well, the wires are relatively long in comparison to the bitrate. DALI doesn't have that problem. It's so slow that you can hook up long, like coat hangers. It doesn't matter which configuration. You can just choose an arbitrary topology. It doesn't matter.
And you can have star topology mixed with daisy chains, mixed with whatever, anything just kind of works. You can also put mains power into DALI. If you do that by accident, DALI has to be able to deal with it, so it's electrician proof and things like that. DMX is 512 bytes that keep getting rebroadcast and that represent the state of the world. DALI is 2 bytes which have a specific meaning. The meaning of the 512 bytes depends on the devices in the world. Both have a back channel, one is an add-on, one is more for fixed installation, one was intended for slow lights. And the main sort of difference is DMX has a smart controller, you'll have a big light setup. DALI has smart devices and they maintain the states. So we have one of those devices that we built, and Matthias is going to show and demo that.
It's we call it the Turbolight 3000 because it's better than the Turbolight 2000. It's basically a device we didn't know which protocol to implement. We were always like annoyed by like having being stuck to one universe. So we built one device that speaks multiple protocols. And basically, this is the control board. This is like in the background. You can see this is a modular structure. You can hook up any sort of electronic LED loads, and those are the modules. You can just chain them together as long as you want. So this one, it's pretty straightforward. I guess you cannot see anything. I'll just go over this. There's a power section. There's an ESP32. That is basically the module that you see here on your badge, same thing, which gives us Wi-Fi and Bluetooth LE, and a nice processor. This is like the programming section, which is also on the board. Like this is pretty standard. This is the interface for DMX. It's just the RS-485 receiver or transceiver, which is the standard chip. You get that ready-made, so it's, one chip. The only, interesting part is the DALI physical layer. Because DALI but maybe someone will understand it. The main thing is that DALI is physically isolated. So these are optical isolators. The DALI circuit and the outside world are separated because this thing could be accidentally hooked to mains voltage and this would break everything else. So it's isolated. DALI basically has just two wires, and it doesn't matter which direction you put them in. So you have this bridge rectifier, which sorts the positive and the negative side of this. The DALI bus does not work alone. There's an external power supply that gives us around 16 volts on the bus. And the devices communicate by just shorting that bus to zero. And the power supply is limited, is current limited, so it doesn't burn when you do that. And that way, everyone can just talk. And you see, this is like a MOSFET. This just shorts this line to this line, and when it closes down, like it's shorted. So this is obviously the send part. Like the transmission comes in, is isolated here, and goes through this one, which can short those two wires. And this is basically. We're allowed, when we're not shorting it to ground, we're allowed 1 milliamp to draw 1 milliamp to power our circuitry. And we use that. So this thing is like, it's a reference voltage. This is just the current mirror. Just to, all the purpose of this is just to take 1 milliamp from here and send it through this LED, which will give us the indication of that the level is high. And when there's no voltage, obviously the LED cannot burn. That's basically how most of the DALI transceiver circuits are made. If you wonder why these three resistors, in case you put mains to it, there's going to be a lot of energy, and we need to get rid of the heat. And that's why we just put in three resistors.
I think for the people who aren't total electronics nerd, they won't know this. These optocouplers are the thing that isolates the mains power from the actual circuitry. And these are actually little packages which we can show you on the board. And they contain an LED. And when there's a signal on here, this LED will go on. It's inside of the package. And there's a light sensor on the other side. So there's actually no electrical connection. There's just a light transmission in between there. And all of that's in a little package. And that's actually pretty neat. Component.
Electricity, there. Light, electricity. There's no metal connection between the two sides. Okay. For the light board, we're not going to show the schematics like the circuit, but the board. Maybe you can see that. Like this is the circuit that we have, and it's based on a boost converter that converts. We have 12 to 24 volts that come in, and this one converts it up to around 60 volts. That is there to power two strings of 12 LEDs each, and you can see they wind around like this. Goes zigzag, zigzag, zigzag around. It winds in. And like there are two large string of LEDs, one with cold light, cold LEDs, and one with warm LEDs. And what you can see is like everything is like a copper area here, and this is just to get out the heat of the LEDs. They each of them produces around half a watt of energy, and so we spread it to copper, which is a good good heat conductor, so we can just take this as a radiator and radiate it out, and it's like this spreads also to the other side, and so we spread even more energy.
And we don't need a cooling body stuck to the back of the modules.
And we can see that we cheated. We actually cheated a bit. Like, we want to have a tunable white lamp that can range from 2700, which is our warm white LED, to 6500, which is a cold white LED. And we're, well, in order to do that correctly, we would have to move along this arc, but we don't. Like, we just interpolate between those two, which gives us like sort of a bit of deviation here. That's basically what many manufacturers do. In order to really follow the curve, you need more primary colors to mix from, which makes everything more expensive and more effort. And we were lazy. Yeah.
But it's kind of interesting to see that it's really this stupid. You just sort of, it's a linear mixing of cold. If you have one LED that's here and one LED of this temperature, you just mix those linearly and you get something along a straight line. It doesn't, it's not as complicated as this whole color temperature thing is. You just sort of average the two lights.
Yeah.
So we're gonna finally do a demo of that.
This is not really exciting, it's just an LED lighting up, but it's about the most complex way you can just turn an LED on. I will slowly dim it up because it's not
wait,
flashing.
Wait, just also the...
Huh?
So you can see, these are the panels with the LEDs. Right now you can see the cold and the warm lights. This is a DALI controller that's off the shelf.
That's something you can buy off shelf and put into your room thing.
Like we said, there's two power supplies. So there's this power supply, which actually produces the power for the lighting. So it's a bigger power supply. And this is the one that provides the power
DALI
to the
power supply,
to
which
the bus that gets
also an off-the-shelf device. And this is the control board in the middle of everything, and a pretty terrible setup. And we can just turn it more up. Or just go up all the way. And this is actually limited right now for development purposes to half of the power that it can give, just that we don't destroy our modules. And then you can turn the turn from warm white to bright white. We didn't do like the optics in front of them. That's supposed to mix the colors in between, and then you would just see an even surface, and we move them like this so you can see it, what's going to happen. One last thing, that's what DALI is nice for. I dim it a bit down. DALI, since it's for permanent installations, it has sort of failure modes. It can report when the lamps are broken. We have a back channel that reports that something's wrong with this module. And you can, for example, have settings what happens if the light control faults doesn't work anymore. Like, say you have a staircase light that shouldn't be off and you cannot turn it on, so you can have a default level what happens when the bus fails. And it should detect that and go to full power.
And that was it. So thank you very much for your attention. And if we want to have questions, we're around. If you want to have a look.
So please go to the microphone when there are any questions, that also the people in the stream can hear it.
So have you played with ArtNet and OSC?
We have done OSC, but not in relation with this lighting project yet. That would be something like that you could probably do with a Wi-Fi connection on this.
So we did a lot of work with MIDI, and that was always, that's usually the question that comes always, why don't you do OSC? And so OSC would also be like, oh yeah, 2 bytes of DALI or like the first 2 bytes of an XML document. So we're not huge fans.
No, OSC can do lots of things, but it's a lot of work. It's a complex protocol, can do many things. And these are so trivial. The protocols are so simple that things tend to work out of the box, which is very nice.
You just inspired 2 more questions. Can you do RGB over DALI?
Yes, you can. Actually, there are 4 different color spaces. One is like just the controlled color temperature. The second one is the coordinates in the CIE, in the graph that I just showed. So you can represent every color. And there are 2 that have up to 6 channels of different primary colors. And you can support either of them. Although there are not many controllers on the market that can actually control it.
And there's not a lot of lamps that can actually display those colors.
Okay, and what about wireless DALI? Is there something like that?
Well, we had this sort of, where was it? Here with the logos, which sort of surprised us because that just showed up. There probably will be something like that, and probably like the next generation of DALL-E won't be as nice as it was, or as reduced as it was, but we don't know. There's it's currently not.
There's something happening at DALL-E. It's like it was still for about 5 years, and then within the last year, I think there were two or three revisions of the standard, which is pretty annoying if you have to buy it again and again. But there is discussion about moving from taking the protocol and moving it to another physical layer like wireless. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next question.
One of the problems with LED, if you have only one color, is that we used to the old school lighting bulbs that when you dim, you get warmer light. And mm-hmm. with a LED, you get a grayish vision because the level of the light goes down and then we do not see enough color. Mm-hmm. In your device, do you bring up warm light when you dim the light to get opposite of that effect?
That would be the next step. Like right now we have, in fact, this is one of the things where you can do with that you can do with this, because you can produce, well, bright light and dim light and warm light and cold light, and you just have to find a way that, like, saying if it's dim it should be warm and if it's brighter it should be colder, the light. That's something that we intend to do in the firmware. Mm-hmm. There are some manufacturers that already do this. It's called like sunset or dynamic dimming or something like this.
Dimming over red or giving more red when you dim.
Right, right. Which will make it like it will simulate the behavior of a traditional mm-hmm. lamp.
Yeah.
And they only expose one channel, like the brightness channel that you mm-hmm. dim, and they automatically know that they should go to warmer colors when they're dimmed. And that's something that we should do in the firmware.
So when traditional incandescents got dimmed, the actual temperature of the tungsten got colder, so the color temperature got warmer, and you simulate that by changing it when you
But that's something that's gonna emerge sooner or later, and some manufacturers have it, and that's something we want to do for this.
Okay, thank you.
Next question.
How do you connect? Can you use any LED strip with it?
Hey,
with your controller, can you hook up LED strips? Any, or is it special?
The typical LED strips. Basically, you would need some sort of adapter. We're not into the LED strip thing too much because they're fancy and you can do many many colors, but they are usually at the CRI level of 70 and below. And they don't. We didn't go into the golds thing. They usually like the typical NeoPixel that you have on the batch, something like this. Yeah. They typically have terrible dimming behavior. Like they only have 8-bit dimming, so you cannot go below 5%. So they're nice for effect lighting, but they're not so good for really room illumination.
We bought a tunable white lamp at the office to play around to see if we like it.
Yeah.
And can we hook up your controller with it?
There are extension ports. You could just put it like that, but then you could take whatever other controller you want. It could be possible. But do you have information on the quality of the light strip that you have? I would be interested. Maybe we can discuss later on.
Yeah.
Well,
cool.
For example, if you have like a DALL-E system in your office, that could hook up to this. The controller would need sort of a driver for your specific LED on there. But it's a general purpose controller, so it would be able to, if it just needs to send out a stream of like the RGB light strips, where you just sort of push out a stream of bits, you could write a backend or a driver for that specific hardware. Yeah.
By the way, are these individually addressable, or are these overall like one color strips?
The lamp specifically has multiple strips on the top and on the bottom, and I think it's two strips. One for brightness and one to mix in some tunable warmth stuff.
Okay, let's discuss that later on. Just come on over.
I would love to play around with one of these things on it.
Sure.
Next question, please.
In terms of protocols, I wonder, have you looked at Bluetooth Low Energy? What future does it have?
No one actually knows. I guess there's a battle going on between different low energy RF modes to control lighting or to get like the smart home leading in that area. We have done quite a couple of Bluetooth low energy projects, not in in relation with light yet. And no one really knows where the path is going to be, but that was one of the reasons why we chose the ESP32, like the controller module, because it also has Bluetooth LE. And it's Bluetooth LE, I personally like it. Yeah. And so we want that to win, but
and,
no
and
one
generally
knows.
On the market with Bluetooth 5, people who are using Bluetooth, there's a mesh mode, so that's a lot more appropriate for lamps as well, that they can talk to each other as well, and not just with the host. Right. So it's a thing that is coming up in the market. Whether that will survive, but I think it's more viable than Zigbee. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Next question, please.
The DMX, I believe it's a little arbitrary the way that you organize the network. But the Dali, as it's everything is has been standardized. It begs the question, if you are controlling the power level, monitoring the power level of the installation, and at the same time you can manipulate all the signals, could you map with that Dali controller and looking at the same time for the power consumption to map the entire installation? Use it as a scanner for the electrical installation, for example.
For a DMX installation?
No, not for DMX. DMX is too arbitrary. But as Dali is standardized, the items, you could make a variation matrix and see if the power levels are going up, that you have something there, and it could be used to map a building, for example, with the Dali installation. With the Dali installation.
Dali has some features like that, and you would be able to, I mean, you can immediately query devices and get their serial numbers and their make and model and things like that. What we would like to also use this device for is as a Dali test device, that you can test Dali devices, see if they conform to the specs and run arbitrary test strings and sequences of. So that kind of it goes in that direction. I think to sort of reverse engineer the lighting setup of a building would probably be pushing it. I mean, you might be lucky if you have a building like this and you know you have 10 lamps and then it can just go through them and you would have some software to say, okay, front left is that one, and it would iterate through all the lamps until you find the one that you're looking for. Something like that would be possible, yeah.
Okay.
Next question, please.
So I just Googled Turbo Light 3000 and I didn't find anything. Do you have this on sale as a kit?
It's a world premiere now. And
it's a world premiere. In fact, I finished the board the night before we left to this place. We try to set up something online, but if not, contact us and we can talk about it.
Right? Yeah, I mean, if you're interested in this sort of thing and you work with lights, definitely we would be happy to have somebody who understands the protocols, a little bit of electrical and firmware programming. We would love to have you as like a beta tester when we have some more samples, yeah.
Awesome. I also wanted to add a comment about Bluetooth.
Okay.
A company I used to work for did a consumer product with 80,000 sold units and had the 50% failure rate for setting up Bluetooth on Android phones.
Whoa.
Yeah, so it's not ready.
Okay, thanks.
Next, please.
I think one quality that's often overlooked is the frequency of the pulse width modulation when it's dimmed. Which frequency did you choose? And did you also consider the effect on people, older people, and maybe even animals, birds, dogs?
We didn't. We picked a really shitty frequency, and that's a little demo I think we can do.
Yeah. This is right now. The way we choose this module is that you can go, there's a trade-off between the dimming frequency, the PWM frequency, and the lowest rate you can achieve, because you cannot do arbitrary short pulses of energy. And so this is currently running at 3 kilohertz dimming, which allows us to go down, like to have a ratio of, what is it, 1 by 1,000 or 1 by 10,000? I don't know, something like that. Let me calculate it later on. Right now we hit a very bad spot, and maybe we can show it, see if it goes on. Yeah. Can you hear it? It makes noise right now.
That's audible noise. That would be something
that we have to tweak on the frequencies on that. It's not tuned yet. It was more important for me not to go down with the dimming, with the PW frequency of a light to get flicker and like these subconscious effects out of the lamp. If we want to hire a dimming ratio, we could go individually down with the dimming frequency for very, very low values, which is usually, rarely used.
Okay, 2 minutes left. Last question, please.
Yeah, actually, I have two questions, so if that's okay. The first one was with the DALI transmit receive circuit. Why did you short out the power supply?
Because that's what you do.
That's the way you send data. It's a Manchester coded bitstream, and you shorted down to ground. The DALI power supply is a voltage and current limited power supply. It's 16 volts idle, and if you have more than 200 milliamps, it should go down to zero. So it's either voltage or current limited. This is like high voltage always pulled down when someone is too mid. This is like I2C on steroids.
Okay, so it's a standard thing. So I probably should.
This is the intended way to do it.
That's how it's supposed to be.
And the second question is a little bit fluffy. For public light installation, I'm looking at LEDs. They're officially ultraviolet, but they have a center wavelength of 405 nanometers. Would you consider that ultraviolet, or will I run into problems with certification or safety
concerning
stuff?
Concerning the blue light hazard, there's no official regulation there, but there are rumors that there will be in the next years.
I see.
Okay.
That was all. Thanks.
Then once again, a warm applause for our two speakers.
Thank you.